our first guest needs no introduction at all. I'm delighted to welcome Susan George. How are you doing, Susan?
Thank you very much indeed. I'm very well, thank you.
Wonderful.
I'm very well. Is the sun shining in Spain?
It is absolutely gorgeous today. It really, really is. I'm sorry. What's your weather like?
Well, actually, we've had some absolutely wonderful weather. Last week, it was just as if we were in the Alps, because I'm 1,000 feet above sea level at the farm, and it was just nothing but blue sky and crisp and cold and beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And I love that kind of, I mean, that's one of my favorite climates and weathers, I suppose, but I do love the sun. I love the sun. The sun makes such a difference, you know. I posted an Instagram the other day just of a message to everybody just about this time that we're going through and how important it is to feel the sunshine, even if you can't see it, to feel it inside. And I think that's so important.
Yeah, it is very, very important, the sun is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, I want to talk about your beautiful farm. It looks idyllic. But first of all, can we just go through your career? Because I know you were born in Surrey. How did you get into acting?
Well, I think that was my lovely mother's decision, really. She pointed me in the right direction. I suppose I was a reasonably pretty child and very gregarious, very outgoing, very gregarious. And so I think she just thought that this was, you know, my mother was on the stage. I've never really found out about that career, and I would love to do Who Do You Think You Are one day, because it would discover all those things for me. Because I do believe that way back when, I've got lots of pictures, history pictures of dancing and theater, and I think she would have been in musical comedy. So she wanted this for me desperately, and she lived sort of vicariously through me, which was just lovely. I pleased her in everything I was doing, so that was really good. So she kind of put me in that direction, but I didn't think I needed much persuading. I think I took it from there and never stopped, really. Never stopped from a tiny age.
Obviously in the genes.
I think it was in the genes. Or it was either, yeah, but I think it just took a hold of me. And as I say, I was in that direction from a tiny, tiny age. I made my first commercial when I was about, I think I was five.
Wow. What commercial was that? Do you remember?
I've been doing it all my life. Horlicks.
Horlicks. Wow. Because I remember you were on the BBC children's show Swallows and Amazons, weren't you?
I was, absolutely. I was 10 then. Nine, in fact. I was nine, playing a 10-year-old, but I was nine. And I loved making that series. That was so special. It was a special time and place, and the Lake District, absolutely beautiful. And you always, as being a young actor, same as today, if there was anything you couldn't do in life, if you took something that involved that particular discipline, then you were taught it, which was wonderful. So I went out sailing and learnt to sail, to be a proper sailor, and all of those things on Swallows and Amazons. So I loved it. I loved all the water sport of it, and the Swallows and the Amazons and all the fun and children and hilarity. It was just such a special series to make.
Yeah, it was great. I remember that one. And one of your, I mean, lots and lots of parts you've played, but one of your very famous ones in the 70s was Straw Dogs with Dustin Hoffman. What was he like?
Well, just a brilliant, I mean, he's just a brilliant actor and extremely generous in his in the way he does things. I mean, just supportive and generous. And I loved working with him. He had a terrific sense of humor, which sometimes was his sense of humor that some people didn't get sometimes. And he did hilarious and very outrageous things. But, you know, we learned to live with that. And I, as an actor, as a friend, as a person, very complex, no question complex. But that's where I think his absolute divine talent came from, this sort of complexities of his character that were so many different people all into one person, why he could just appear and disappear as a person all the time. He could play anybody he wanted to play.
Yeah. Very, very talented guy.
Very talented.
And were you once in EastEnders? Is that true?
Sorry?
Were you once in EastEnders?
Briefly, yes, I was. I was, yes, I was. I wanted to, I was asked to go into EastEnders, and it was just a three-month slot. And it was a particular role that they wanted me to play. And it was sort of, I was saying to someone the other day, or someone said to me that I kind of broke that mold of someone from film going into television and into a soap like that. And I loved it. It was a different way of working, and I wanted to discover that and find out. It's hard work. It's really, really hard work. I admire actors on a soap opera so much. I think they do a fantastic, fantastic job. And it was a wonderful experience for, as I say, a brief period of time. But I played a character that was in, she had a beginning and a middle and an end. And when it ended, that was it. It ended. And I went on to do something else. But I really, at the time, I enjoyed every moment of that, especially the cast. I was always slightly afeared of what it was going to be like stepping into the shoes of people who knew this so well, who had already very firm characters and very firm friendships. And I thought it might be very tricky coming in from the outside, but they never made me feel an outsider. On the contrary, everyone was incredibly, incredibly welcoming and supportive and lovely, and I love doing it.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that about Coronation Street and Emmerdale and EastEnders as well. Although they're like a family, a well-established family, they're great with newcomers as well.
They are. They just, you become a part of that family very instantly, you know, which is so lovely. Important, I suppose, as much for them as it is for you as the newcomer, the stranger, to be accepted into that family. And then, you know, you have to, as every character that you take on that's a new character, you have to have a back role, a history. And you have to kind of have been part of that family before you get there. That sounds like a very odd thing to say, but I'm sure you understand.
I do understand. I do absolutely understand.
And what archive.
Yes, of course. Yeah. One of my favourites, I have to say, was the Best Marigold Hotel, which you did more recently in India. For those that don't realise, I mean, that was the third series, wasn't it? And you literally went out there and you were yourself. You weren't acting.
No, that's exactly why I took it. It was, for me, I still look back and go, gosh, did I really say yes to that? Did I really do that?
It's very brave.
But it was just a very, an extraordinary decision for me. Even in this public persona world, which one has to be, I have a really, really private side to my nature, my character. My homeland is everything to me. And I'm amazed, really, that I said yes, knowing that I was just... Well, the only thing I can say is that I've always been one to jump off a cliff without a net. And this was one of those instances. It really was. I love challenge. Challenge of anything. I was asked the other day what I wanted to do now. I'm so busy in my life, I'm very lucky to say, very fortunate to say. And somebody said to me, what did I really want to do at this moment in my life? And I said, just about anything I haven't done before. And that's how I feel about life. I really do. And so when Marigold came along, I said yes, almost without thinking about it. I'm not a person to analyze. I'm an instinctive actress, and I'm an instinctive person in life. You know, I live for today about everything. And so, yes, I said yes. Never thought about it again. Never, people said, advise me, my friends, look at the tapes, look at what's gone before, see the way people interact or don't interact, or how they get on or don't get on and all of that. And I just didn't want to know that, not at all. I also didn't want to know about India. I just wanted to escape and have that vision, that place first seen in my own eyes. It was really, really important to me. I hadn't seen the real Marigold Hotel at that point, and I couldn't go back and look at that before I went to India, because I just didn't want, I wanted to discover it for myself. I really did. And it was really important to me that everything would be new and fresh, and indeed it was. Every part of that experience was first seen in my own eyes, and it was the most amazing experience of a lifetime.
Mm.
I wondered at times when one's in the thick of it, oh my goodness, what have I got myself into here? But when I look back, I look upon it as nothing but a wonderful, wonderful experience. As I said, one of a lifetime, and that I would do again in a heartbeat.
Oh, that's nice to hear. That's great. And are you all still in touch? I remember Stanley Johnson, Stephanie Beecham, Selena Scott. Are you all still in touch with each other?
Yeah, I've called people from time to time. We've stayed in contact, definitely. The person I've most stayed in contact is Selena. Selena and I write to one another in the old-fashioned way. We do write to one another a lot, which is lovely. We're both very old-fashioned beings. I think we should have been born in a different era, both of us. And so we have an awful lot in common. And we write long emails to one another about life and what's going on rather than phone calls, which is really fabulous. I absolutely love that. And Stanley has a home here out where I live in the West Country. And so I see Stanley and his lovely wife from time to time. And we've spent time together, which has been lovely. The Crankies, I've called them, but they're in Australia a lot. and so I definitely have kept in contact, but in a sort of, they're friends. We're all friends. I think we will be friends for always.
Lovely. It's not easy to keep in touch with anybody at the moment, isn't it?
Sid Little. I call Sid Little, and indeed, I was so sad that the large part of Sid Little, bless his heart, that was a real sadness for Sid, and I was very sorry for him, and I called him through that time.
Yeah.
Because I had a really special...
He was
a very
lovely.
A soft spot for Sid, yeah.
Oh,
a real soft
really
spot.
Well,
I remember there was a time in that, if you remember, when we sat on a rock together and kind of talked, and we talked for a long time. They only take a little bit of that conversation. You never know. As a producer, I'm well aware of that. You never know what's going to be picked out and what's going to be cut together, and indeed how relationships are going to be cut together and how it's going to work, you know. It was quite interesting for me because I had to try so hard to put down my producer's hat and just be me and not think about what on earth was going on behind the scenes. That was incredibly important.
Yeah, the fear is, are they going to edit it in a way that can somehow make you look bad and not make you look like the person you really are?
Well, I think as long as you stay true to yourself, they can't do that, because you are, as long as you're happy with yourself inside, and as I say, that you portray the person that you are, you genuinely are the person that you are, I think that's the most important part. And it was the most important part for me that came across. I may not have had the most screen time, but that was not important to me, not at all. Just what was important to me was waking up every day, experiencing these fantastic places that we went to, people that we met, wonderful relationships that we established, and things about the country and the people in it that I found, the people that smile all the time when there's really so little to smile about, makes you so grateful, you know, so grateful. One of the things that I'd like to say to you is about... One of the experiences that was most important to me was we went to the Golden Palace, and we went to where they serve 1,000 plates of food a day to anybody who is hungry. Absolutely,
wow.
Anybody. 1,000 plates a day, and they wash up 1,000 plates a day.
Okay.
And it's the most extraordinary. And they showed just a little bit of it. They could have done a whole episode on that. It was the most extraordinary experience. We went in. We sat on the floor. We wrapped food parcels. We did also the way they prepare food. We helped to prepare food. We helped to dish out the rice. But we also, we sat in this long, long line. I shall never forget that. It was quite reminiscent of Oliver. And can I have some more, please, with our little tin bowls and this food that they came and just ladled out in each and every one of these bowls. And as I say, 1,000 a day. Can you imagine?
That's a lot, isn't it?
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it goes on every single day. We were just... escaping to this place and photographing just a small portion of it. But the actual living there and doing this every day was so incredibly gracious and unselfish and gorgeous, just gorgeous beings. I learned so much. That was the best day for me. best bet.
Yeah, it is an incredible country. I'm fortunate enough to have been there and seen the sort of poor side and the richer side as well.
But extraordinary, isn't it? One side of the street, the incredible affluent, affluence and unbelievable, and the other side of the street, nothing. And then the people in the middle. And as I say, those people that smile all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
With nothing, there's so little to smile about. But I go back to the point about sunshine in your heart. If you have it in your heart, you have it for other people, and you find so much pleasure in little things. I think perhaps, I'm hoping, that this awful period of time, and it has been awful for so many people, this viral war that we're still living in, I hope that it's taught a lot of people about the little things in life, the importance of little things, the importance of time, the importance of people, the importance of care and giving back. I'm sure it has. I can see that, you know, I'm truly of the belief that things happen in life for a purpose, and we don't always know that purpose at the time. Of course we don't.
Mm.
I didn't know the purpose of Marigold, but there was a purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
And that purpose was to, for me, was to, when I came back, months later, the spirit that I had lost when I lost my beautiful love of my life husband, that spirit came back, and I realized that I was, whereas I had been laughing, I was laughing, but my heart wasn't laughing.
Right,
and
yeah.
I realized that that's what Marigold did for me.
Oh, how
and I think
wonderful.
That this, well, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off then.
It's lovely. It's lovely to hear that. You're talking about Simon McCorkindale, yeah?
Yeah, I am. And I think this pandemic and all of the dreadfulness that we have and people have lived through, at the same time, I think we're being taught phenomenal life lessons.
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly does make you appreciate the little things more, doesn't he? Things that we've took for granted in the past.
Absolutely, and one can only hope that when it's all over, and it will be eventually, that we take the best things from it, the lessons that we learned, and hold them close to our heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the most beautiful things in your life, I've been looking at your website, are the most gorgeous Arabian horses. You are an Arabian horse breeder now. I'm a massive, massive horse fan, and I'm just looking at these pictures constantly. So how did that happen? Have you also always been into horses?
Yeah, I have really. I rode a little pony when I have a picture of me as a 5-year-old on a pony. My mum used to take me to lessons. I used to muck out stables in return for riding lessons.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And then all those years ago in California, when I was 23 years of age, a boyfriend at the time, I was riding at a local stables in Ventura. And I fell in love with this chestnut mare. She was just wonderful. And she was 7/8 Arab. And her attitude was so loyal and giving. And I just loved this horse, just loved her to pieces. And this boyfriend bought her for me as a birthday present, which was the greatest gift. Absolutely, absolutely. And she was in my life for many, many, many years. And then when I came back from California to England, Simon and I decided to bring our production company back to England after many years, 12 years of living in California. And I just felt that she had such a great life in California. And she was an endurance mare, and I'd bred one filly from her. And she was so special. And every time I went out there and sat on a fence, the true flicker story, she would spin her head round and come galloping towards me. And I was her everything, and I knew that.
Mm.
And I thought that was desperately selfish of me, because I couldn't give that back. I couldn't give her that back in terms of time. So I made the decision when we left, rather than bring her to England, to give her to a journalist friend of mine in Australia. And he didn't live in Australia. He lived in Malibu Canyon, but he was Australian journalist called Colin Dangwood. And I gave her to him. And I never looked back. I never went to see her because I couldn't.
Too hard, yeah.
That was too hard. It really was. But Simon said to me, when we came to England and when we were going to stop being like gypsies and travelling around the world out of a suitcase all of our lives, when we actually settled and came home to England and were going to be in one place for a real length of time, that we would go looking for that mare all over again. And that's what happened.
Oh.
We arrived in England. We had offices at Shepperton Studios and we had our production company and we were very big in film at the time, making several productions. And he said to me, well, now is the time for you to look for that horse, to bring that little part of your life back that means so much to you. So I went looking across the United Kingdom everywhere. And I knew I wanted Chestnut and I knew I wanted a mare. I wanted quite old so that she could be established and would be a real pleasure ride for me, just a plod, really, just something as Shatsy had been around the mountains in California, around the beautiful countryside in England. And so off I went, looking and looking and looking, and then I was directed towards a farm that really only sold show horses, and big show horses, top brass show horses. And I was presented, this mare was presented before me, this Chestnut mare who was fitted my description. No, definitely not. Not 100% not. She was wonderful, athletic, that fitted my description, but had never been backed, never seen a saddle, extremely feisty, and a mother with a foal at foot, oh. Everything that I wasn't looking for. And I fell in love. And I came back to Simon and said, I found her. it doesn't fit the requirement. It isn't what I was looking for. She isn't what I was looking for, but I love her, Simon. And I went back 7 times to visit, making sure I was making the right decision. Very unusual for me. As I said, I'm very instinctive and I usually just do it right there, but I didn't. I spent the time and I just learned more and more about the fact how she wasn't a fit and wasn't right for requirement. And more I fell in love with her. Oh. And that's where it all began for me. So
oh.
I brought her home and then I loved having, I didn't have her foal because she belonged to the stable. It was a lovely stable farm in England called Silverdale Arabians. And I brought her home without the foal. They sold the foal. They wanted to sell the foal. And I brought her home, and I decided to put her in foal myself. And that's where it kind of all began. So I had one foal before I backed her, and then decided to back her very late in life, 10 years old, really. Mm-hmm. But as I discover now, that's not late at all. We back many of our horses at 10 years old, because the Arabian horse is a very late maturer.
Right.
In terms of physically, not so much mentally, but physically, they take a long time to actually feel their full strength and power, and they need all of that, all of it for their ongoing lives, for all their capability, which is huge, huge, way, way beyond what everyone expects of them, way beyond. I have very passionate feelings about the Arabian horse, and I don't think a quarter, perhaps a third of the world really knows how special the Arabian horse is.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're beautiful. I'm just looking at one on your website now. Beautiful. Susan, I could
speak.
They
are beautiful, Selina, but you know what? They're not just beautiful. They are real, fantastic riding horses and fit for children. Anybody who wants to take them on, they're just the greatest, greatest friends.
Yeah.
And you have to know how to treat them.
Yeah. I could speak to you for hours. I really wish we weren't running out of time. If I could cancel all my advert breaks, I would do, but I'd probably be fired.
No, you mustn't do that.
It's been an absolute delight. I just want to tell people to go and look at your website, which is all the W's, georgianarabians.com, and see the beautiful horses.
And the other is called weselldreams.co.uk.
We sell dreams.
Dreams, all one word, weselldreams.co.uk.
Okay, brilliant.
And that's where I just have to say one thing to mm-hmm. you without getting yeah. you in trouble. I was about to set up a business this year where I was going to teach people how to handle the Arabian horse, which is so pure and simple, and bring them here. And it was this business, We Sell Dreams, I set up to begin in January. And of course, then everything happened and nobody's able to come, but they will as soon as we get to the other side.
And we will eventually.
We will.
Susan,
so I ask everyone, can I send out a message
you can.
Of huge hope and happiness and strength and kindness in this world, we will get through this and out the other side.
That's wonderful. What a great point to finish on. Thank you so much for being on the show, Susan.
My pleasure, Selena.
Take
Have a wonderful,
care.
Wonderful afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.